Possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, holding a welcome back food tasting for returning students, faculty, and residents on Saturday, August 28th. Featured will be more than 100 international food items, including cheeses, olives, breads, chocolates, and more. World Harvest Foods at the intersection of 6th and University Avenue, Champaign.
Now's the time. Charlie Parker recorded July 30th, 1953, New York, from the original recordings of Charlie Parker. Good afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Our guest today is journalist, civil libertarian, and music critic Nat Hentoff. He began writing for The Village Voice in 1957. Today, his syndicated column appears in more than 250 newspapers in the U.S., and of course, he's still writing for The Village Voice. His writings are often controversial, provocative. He's an atheist, a champion of the First Amendment, a foe of capital punishment and abortion. He's been a critic of many presidents, including the current administration of George W. Bush and its predecessor, the Clinton administration. Nat Hentoff, as I mentioned, is also a music critic, a well-respected music critic, and his latest book is about music. American Music Is was published in March of this year. It's a collection of more than 60 pieces written over the last several years. Listeners, I invite you to join the conversation this afternoon. I expect we'll have a wide-ranging discussion, and I look forward to your questions and comments. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest, Nat Hentoff. He is the author of many books of fiction and nonfiction, including The War on the Bill of Rights and The Gathering Resistance, Living the Bill of Rights, and Free Speech for Me but Not for Thee. His books on music include The Jazz Life and Jazz Is. His new book, American Music is available from DeCapo Press. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Nat Hentoff, good to talk with you. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, thank you for asking. You had the introduction right. In view of my positions that you outlined, there ought to be conflicting pickets outside by the end of the show.
Free speech for everybody here this afternoon. I wanted to open with Charlie Parker, since you open this collection of pieces on music, American Music Is, with words from Parker talking about life and music. I don't know if you have the book there with you. Maybe you
could. No, I don't.
Could I then share the epigraph with our listeners?
Why not?
Okay. Let's see here. Let me unbutton my copy.
Could I have a little more volume on your end?
Okay.
I've been listening to loud music too long.
Okay. Well, we'll see if this is a little better.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Well, here's the epigraph from American Music Is, the words of Charlie Parker. Music is your own experience, your thoughts, your wisdom. If you don't live it, it won't come out of your horn. They teach you there's a boundary line to music, but man, there's no boundary line to art. Those are the words of Charlie Parker. You know, I would want you maybe to offer your thoughts on those words of wisdom.
It reminded me, when I was quite young, I was privileged to get to know Duke Ellington. And Duke had no patience for categories or labels. He said, you have to open yourself up to the music. And he even didn't like the term jazz. And back in the 20s, he went to Fletcher Henderson, who had a very important band then, and said, why don't we call what we do black music? Because then people won't confuse it. Well, Fletcher Henderson didn't want to do that, But then later, Duke said, well, the way it's gone now, anybody can play the music if they know how. So, but nonetheless, he kept away from all categories. In fact, when he wrote music, as he always did for the band, he didn't even use the categorical term for trumpet or trombone. I've seen some of the scores, and he'd have the name of the player, each player, because he said, I know their strengths and I know their weaknesses.
Yeah. The musicians you admire, the people that you admire all around, are people you call searchers. They're interested in going somewhere. They're authentic. And one of the pieces in the book, American Music, is Clark Terry talks about Duke Ellington and his choice, his need to keep fooling with the compositions.
Well, as Clark said, Duke, he was in the band for a long time. Duke never liked to stay with any particular ending. And so, he, you know, in rehearsals or recording sessions, he'd always listen to the other men if they had suggestions. So the music kept changing according to the, you know, the performance. In fact, I knew a bass player with the band who said sometimes there were spaces, there was no notes at all. And then he'd say, well, what am I supposed to do here? And Duke would say, listen, sweetie, listen.
Yeah, that's great. Fair to say that authenticity and integrity are themes that you're interested in visiting and revisiting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I still can't hear you too well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, let me try and speak a little louder, and we'll see.
That might help.
Okay, we'll see. I'm soft-spoken.
Yeah, authenticity, of course, is the essence of not only the music, but any kind of both inner and public discourse. That's why in this election I'm not voting for anybody for president, because I think all of them are inauthentic. Last time I voted for Ralph Nader, but now he's, for example, saying, well, get the troops out of there, which would lead to not only chaos, but a Hobbesian state of nature and more killings now than there are now. And I have no, well, as my book indicates, I think George Bush has no sense of constitutional rights, and I think Mr. Kerry is an empty suit.
Wow. So you're not even going to choose between...
I'm not going to choose between any of the three. If Dizzy Gillespie was still around and Dizzy once ran for president, I'd vote him in. And I don't mean that as a joke. I had great respect for him, not only as a musician. But, you know, one of the things I'm concentrating on now, there was a superb story in the Washington Post last Sunday, a front-page story. It went at great length inside. And it mainly concerned, it was written by Michael Dobbs. It was a very strongly researched story. And the import of it, well, he was going into the conflict between the Kerry campaign and the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. And he said, in one of the main conflicts, it looked to be to him, and he had the backup, that Kerry was right and they were wrong. But then, deep in the story, he said something which I had not seen before, and I seldom have heard since on cable television or in the printed press. When the Washington Post went to the Navy and asked for the release of all of Kerry's records, now on cable and all those debates, the Kerry people say, oh, they're all on his website. They're not. And the Navy said, we can only give you, I think it was 12 or 16. There are more than 100 that he does not allow us to give. In the same story, you know, Douglas Brinkley wrote a biography of Kerry's years in Vietnam, essentially. And some of his diaries and the like are with Brinkley. And Brinkley can't release them, he says, because he has an agreement with the Kerry campaign not to release them. Now, here we're talking about a conflict that is at the core of the campaign. Now, again, I'm not a partisan, as I just said, for any of them. But if you're talking about authenticity and that slippery word, truth, why doesn't Kerry allow all of his records to be released? I don't know, but I think that's a core question for this campaign.
Hmm. Nat Hentoff is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's a journalist, civil libertarian, and music critic. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions and comments. Join the discussion with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Is there anybody out there in politics today that that you admire?
That's a hard question. Let me think. I'll tell you, Joe Lieberman, when he's not running on anybody's ticket for vice president, tends to be more straightforward than a good many of the others. Then I have to go searching. I'll tell you one other thing that interests me a lot. The Patriot Act has done a lot to, along with other things the administration has done, to subvert some of the basic liberties in the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights. Now, there is rising resistance in Congress, largely because of the extraordinary effect of the Bill of Rights defense committees around the country. There are now, I think, over 300 towns and cities and three or four state legislatures that have passed resolutions telling their members of Congress to look at what's going on under the Patriot Act and demand answers. And in Congress, there are some Democrats who are very good on this, John Conyers of Michigan being one, Pat Leahy of Vermont. But the main reason for the resistance in Congress, and this goes against labels, are the very conservative Republican libertarians. There's a man named Butch Otter in the House who almost got a bill passed that would take away one of the key sections, Section 213, which allows the FBI to come into your home and office without even telling you, take what they want, look at your hard drive, and then not give you any notice for a long time to come. And Bob Barr, when he was in Congress, whom a lot of liberals find distasteful, was the strongest against the Patriot Act. He signed it with a lot of other people and then regretted it bitterly. So there's an interesting coalition around the country. The American Civil Liberties Union has several times convened not only People for the American Way, but on the other side, the Free Congress Foundation, which is very conservative but libertarian, and even Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum. So the reason Bush is getting very nervous, as is Ashcroft, and they keep saying to Congress, forget the Sunset Clause. In the Patriot Act, they have to review sections of it by the end of next year and decide whether to keep them. So the administration says, oh, no, we got to keep them all. But the main reason they don't think they're going to succeed is this coalition in Congress, which comes from the grassroots. It reminds me of one of the great events of the American Revolution, when Sam Adams and John Hancock and other folks in Boston, I think it was in 1657 around there, started the committees of correspondence. They didn't have the Internet. That's how the Bill of Rights defense committees do so well. But they sent letters all through the colonies telling what happened, and this is contemporary too. The British customs people and troops had what was called a general search warrant. That meant they could go into the homes and offices of the American colonists whenever they will, turn everything upside down, including the people in them, looking for contraband. And they did some very horrible things. So the committees of correspondence let the colonists across along the seaboard tell what was going on. And in my book, I found this in another book, in Williamsburg, Thomas Jefferson and some of the folks there had a secret meeting at a tavern, and Jefferson said, I'm paraphrasing, you know what they're doing in Boston makes some sense. So they started a committee of correspondence, and that's what has led to that kind of, you know, now it's called the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. There is real resistance against what's happening to our liberties.
Yeah. Although the administration won a battle on this this issue this summer.
Which one are you talking about?
I'm talking about wasn't there a debate over some provisions of the Patriot Act, and the administration prevailed.
Oh yeah, they would have lost in that one, but the Speaker of the House, Hastert, kept delaying the vote, while the whips and the other pressures from the White House came down on some of the Republicans who wanted to vote for the liberty, for the Constitution, and finally the administration won by one vote. That wasn't a very famous victory. Infamous might be the word.
Okay. Well, let's talk with some listeners. We've got a caller waiting for us on the toll-free line, a listener on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I've just started to listen to you, but I've taken a lot of your comments and thrown them out the window because you're not going to vote. And it seems to me if you don't vote, you don't count.
Well, I tell you something. I'm lucky. I have a forum. I write for newspapers around the country. I'm on the radio a lot. So what I have to say counts. But I have a certain sense of conscience. I'm going to vote for all the other things on the ballot. But if I have no respect whatsoever for the three candidates running for president, I'm not. You know, I will tell you this. I live in New York State. If it was very, very close, which it is not, Kerry's going to win this state without even trying, then I might reconsider. But I'm not. I can't, as somebody who writes about these things and say what I'm saying today and then go to the polls and choke on what I'm voting. I can't do that.
You have no credibility if you don't vote.
Well, that's what you say. I don't agree with you. It's free country. You say what you want. I say what I want.
Thank you very, very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Belgium, Illinois, on line one. Hi.
Yes, hello.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Hentoff.
Yes, sir.
Yes. I became aware of you through my brother when he lived in New York City, and he would send me clippings of yours, your jazz reviews.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I became acquainted with you. And that's all I wanted. I'm just really pleased to say thank you.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Thank you for being Ned Hentoff. I really appreciate you.
Well, okay. I'll tell you, it's the jazz and country music, too, that keep me going, because when I have to spend most of my time writing about this terrible genocide in Darfur, which the United Nations is not doing anything real about, and then what's going on here with the Constitution, I get very down, but it takes jazz to pick me up again. So I owe a lot to the people who make that music.
Let's talk with another listener, a caller on line two in Champaign County. Good afternoon.
Hi. Yeah, the bill that you mentioned, the coalition of the right libertarians, but
yeah.
The bill that was mentioned by the host was actually sponsored by Bernie Sanders.
Oh, yeah, that was the Section 215.
Right.
And Bernie Sanders, who is an independent from Vermont, I think he's the only one. Well, Ron Paul of Texas is really a libertarian with a capital L, but to get reelected, he runs as a Republican. But I have a lot of respect for Bernie Sanders and Vermont, that somebody can get office and call himself an independent.
Well, he used to call himself a socialist, actually, and
yeah.
I respected that, too.
Yeah, I wish he could do that, too.
You know, you can praise these Republican libertarians, but when they got called on the carpet by their maximum leader, they, you know, capitulated, and they figured
out
how many...
Not all of them. That's the point.
What's
Most
that?
Of them stood fast. There were about four or five, pardon me, who finally switched. That's happened in the past with Democrats, too. Unfortunately, you know, I've been reading the Federalist Papers again, and even Alexander Hamilton, who was a realist, some might say in some respects a cynic, he really believed, as Jefferson did, and John Adams as well, that the people who would get into Congress wouldn't stay very long, but they were the kind of people who argued and finally decided on the Constitution, and they were what they called then virtuous men, men with conscience. They had too high an expectation of many of the people we now elect to Congress.
Well, they demanded a lot from the media, and that's what I wanted to get to next, was because I heard you were in the position of calling in on a call-in show with Robert Greenwald, the producer of Outfoxed. And
yeah,
you
that's, you know, I've just finished a column on that.
Have you seen the film then?
I have a transcript of it, and I heard him a great length, not only on that program.
Well,
and wait a minute, you want me to answer the question?
Well, actually,
you're going to let me talk?
Yet.
Okay. I watch Fox a lot. There's no question that their commentators are very much on the right, particularly O'Reilly and Hannity. But I've been following politics and writing about it for a long time. There are no better Washington correspondents than Carl Cameron and Jim Angle. They don't tilt. And this is the kicker. And I asked Greenwald this, and he evaded my question. In all of media, radio, television, print, there's only one person I know of whose beat His regular beat is the state of health of the Constitution. In all respects, he continually criticizes Bush and Ashcroft for what they're doing. He's on Fox every afternoon from 5 to 6 with John Gibson. He's on in the morning. They bring him in on other things. His name is Judge Anthony Napolitano, and he sounds like James Madison come to life. Now, it's perfectly correct to criticize Fox for the right-wing commentators, sometimes the way they try to tilt the news from New York. Nobody ever mentions Napolitano. That goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. People think in categories and labels. Most of the people who knock Fox don't watch it. Or Greenwald does it, and like Michael Moore, he takes things, rips things out of context, and is not fair. I'm not talking about fair and balance, but you can't talk about Fox without mentioning Anthony Napolitano.
Okay, caller on line two. Follow up.
Well, I hope you pointed out in your article that you didn't actually see the video.
No, but Greenwald went at great length, and I've seen a transcript of most of the show. I know it is, you know, the left and the right both, when they do what are now called documentaries, they start with a point of view, and they leave out anything that conflicts with the point of view. Take Fahrenheit, the Michael Moore
movie.
They're
like columnists, then.
All you find out about
doing.
Iraq before Saddam Hussein was removed is the kids flying the kite. There's not anything in there about the mass graves, the torture chambers, the hundreds of thousands of people who were murdered.
Well, that's
now,
not
you
true.
Can attack Bush and those people,
really,
but why don't you put that in?
He did have it in, and he pointed out that
he did not have it in. I saw the movie. There is nothing about the mass graves or the torture chambers.
He pointed out that with the handshake of Donald Rumsfeld,
that's not the same thing. Did you?
Can I have a chance?
One of the best known facts about Hussein was, and it was in John Burns, a great reporter for the New York Times, and then it was circulated. Saddam Hussein's eldest son, Uday,
I know
used to run on the streets with a mob, a posse, an official posse. They'd pick up women who were accused of criticizing Hussein, and they'd behead them in the public square. That is not in Michael Moore's film.
But there is an allegation that he did damage to the population.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the context
a nice
is that we were supporting
what about
Hussein
the
hundreds
of thousands? You know, the people there are still picking through the graves, trying to find the bones of their loved ones. There's no question about the torture chambers where women were raped in front of their husbands so that they could confess to something they hadn't done. That's not in Michael Moore's film. I know Michael Moore. I have no respect for him at all.
Okay, let's give our caller another chance, but please let's not both talk at the same time. Let's...
Well, I have not been able to finish a paragraph. And
well, go ahead at great length.
Okay, there is a mention of Hussein's crimes, and it's the context it's given is the fact that the U.S. was supporting Hussein at the time. At the time when stuff you were describing,
right,
we were
you just said something. Give me the mention, as you put it, of Hussein's crimes. Were any of them detailed in any kind of vivid way?
No, but they
no,
were
they
pointed
weren't.
To,
That's
and
my
they were,
point.
And we were, we
it
were,
was a
we were
honest film.
We were his. The U.S. was helping him at the time. We
I
were
agree
getting,
with that.
We
I have no use for any of the previous administrations.
So
I'm trying to get to the facts. The facts were, and that there was a U.N. rapporteur who did a study of all the horrible dictators we've had, including currently in North Korea, Mugabe in Zimbabwe, Fidel Castro in Cuba. Nobody did more brutal harm to his people than did Hussein. That does not come out of Michael Moore's film.
Okay, now let's bring Mr. Hentoff down, and let's give our caller one last opportunity here to get in a complete thought.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to handle it in this context, but I really think you should see the whole video. Carl Cameron is obsequious with Bush in Out Fox, and it's really important to know that kind of thing would not be even allowed at CNN, which I don't hold as a paragon of any kind of reportage. But the role that Mr. Hentoff has been playing, I wish he would just write about jazz, actually, and maybe some civil liberties. But the role of apologists for this administration that he's taken on in a lot of ways is reprehensible, it seems to me. And I'm sorry to end on what sounds like a personal attack, but you really need to be fairer to these filmmakers. You can't just say all these documentarists make these films that are just misleading. They aren't misleading. They actually have a point of view, just like a columnist has a point of view.
Okay, I think we've covered it.
All right, I just want to make one point. I know somebody who was close to John Ashcroft. He's no longer with the office, and he said that Ashcroft made it clear that he would okay for him to be interviewed by reporters, but never by me. That's part of my obsequiousness to the administration. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to thank our listener for calling this afternoon and for a lively back and forth discussion there. Our guest today, Nat Hentoff. He's a journalist, civil libertarian, music critic, and he regularly makes both sides of the political spectrum unhappy. Listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation this afternoon with your questions, with your comments, you're invited to do so. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. And a request here to everybody that let's listen to one another here this afternoon, and we'll go back and forth between the guests and the callers this afternoon. And, you know, this kind of exchange reminds me of a cover recently on The New Yorker illustrating our willingness to shout at one another and our unwillingness to listen. And down one side of the cover, silhouettes of people waving the flag.
All right, may I politely disagree with
you?
When people say something that is wrong, factually incorrect, both sides have the right to jump in. Otherwise, what you have is civil but absolutely blurred dialogue. I have no problem with that as a reporter and as somebody on these shows. If you don't like it, you can cut me off.
Okay, well, here's my point of view on this.
We have different points of view.
Okay, but here's what I'm trying to say. If you're both talking at the same time, I can't hear
you. I try not to, but sometimes you have to. If I hear somebody saying something that is incorrect, I will come in.
Okay.
And the other person has the right to do the same thing.
Okay, and then those of us who are trying to make sense of what the people are saying.
We are spending more time on this. We don't agree. Do you want to continue and have other people call, or should we end this discussion?
Let's continue.
Okay.
Let's talk with another listener. Line one, a caller in Urbana.
Yes.
Go ahead.
What I want to talk about is Saddam Hussein. Yes, he was a bad dictator. He was not the only one. And when he killed a lot of people over there in Iraq, the United States did not give a darn. All they wanted him to do was to take on Iran. I get sick of these people trying to ram something down somebody's throat when you just because a person got a little education and a reporter, you think everybody else is stupid. We know what happened, and I don't think that Bush should have went into Iraq without the other big nations in with him. I mean, he didn't even understand the place. Look how many kids and young men and women is dead, 960-something.
Is she through? Okay, shall I respond to that?
Go ahead.
In terms of the other nations and why they didn't come in with us, it had nothing to do with the arms inspectors or whatever. Both Germany and France and also China had economic interests in Iraq. They dealt with Iraq. We were, as the previous caller said, just as guilty when Donald Rumsfeld went over there and encouraged Saddam Hussein to make war on Iran. So nobody was clean on all of this. Even Bill Clinton, I give him credit for this, said 2 weeks ago, and I quoted it in the column in Financial Times, the newspaper, he said there was no way you could get France or Germany to agree to any kind of invasion of Iraq. what the administration did, it was false, and it has no justification. They talked about weapons of mass destruction, alleged ties with Al-Qaeda, instead of being honest. What Bush and Cheney and those people should have done is what Clinton finally did too late in Rwanda. There is a case for a humanitarian intervention. We did go into Kosovo, and we saved some lives. We did not go into Rwanda, where 800,000 people were massacred when the United States knew about it, and Kofi Annan, who was then the head of peacekeeping for the UN, was told by a very brave man, Romeo Dallaire, in Rwanda, hey, we can stop this. And Kofi Annan wouldn't do a thing, and Clinton wouldn't do anything. If this had been told to the American people, and it has been told several times on a very important documentary, a real documentary show called Frontline on public broadcasting, the evidence was there. We didn't do anything. If Bush had had the sense and the honor to say to the American people, look, these people are being brutalized and killed and murdered and whatever, then the public would have decided on real grounds. I don't know how they would have decided, but the reason for the war was phony from the administration. What we should have gone in, because otherwise these mass graves would be bulging even higher now.
Let's talk with another listener, caller on line two in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hi, I was just inquiring as to, there was a representation made that you couldn't vote for either candidate for president because neither one of them were strong enough to speak out against the Patriot Act. But in today's political environment, isn't it possible that somebody running for a national office would have spoke out against the Patriot Act? They'd be portrayed as Kerry's being portrayed now in the Swift Boat ad. And in the case of a presidential contender who would speak out, or any other top-level politician who would speak out against government intervention somewhere, look what's happened to Clinton in his stand against what went on in the Slavic countries. I mean, he's been butchered over and over again by the right wing for taking the actions he took in the former Yugoslavia.
Remember, Clinton didn't go into Yugoslavia until he was pushed in. He also knew about what was going on in Iraq as well. No, Clinton, in many ways, was a charming man, but he didn't have much backbone, and that's what bothers me about all these candidates. So, you know, where is Kerry on civil liberties? He was in the Senate for 20 years. I cover civil liberties more closely than anything else I do. There was not one major bill or even small bill in which he has a good rating. He has a good ACLU rating, but he was never a leader in this regard. I mean, in the speech in Boston at the convention, he gave, I think, 40 seconds to his 20-year Senate career. I would much rather vote for somebody for president, but I can't in conscience do it. That's, you know, other people are going to do it. Millions of people are going to do it. That doesn't make me superior to them, but I have to live with myself.
In 1988, Dukakis was decapitated by Bush because
he was
a member of the Civil Liberties Union. Just because a man was a member of the American Civil Liberties Union, he was blackballed by the president, by the person who ended up winning the candidacy for the president of the United States, and he was turned into a communist criminal of the highest regard because of a membership in the American Civil Liberties Union.
It was
now,
even worse than that.
In that campaign in Massachusetts, there
was a law that said that teachers had to give the Pledge of Allegiance, whether they agreed with it or not in conscience. Dukakis had the courage to say he would not sign that law. They had the First Amendment right to not go along with it, and that's when George Bush Sr. was photographed. It was like a Monty Python thing, photographed in a flag factory, surrounded by flags. You're right. What happened to Dukakis was absolutely disgusting.
So why would a president candidate now try to stick his neck out, knowing that just like the Swift Boat ads are demeaning and trying to destroy his credibility, he would put himself against that kind of nonstop advertising that would run constantly?
Oh, no, come on. There are some people who have courage. George McGovern had courage. There are people now, I would think. Bernie Sanders could run for president. He wouldn't have much chance. But to say that people should be intimidated by what happens to people, that tells us that we're a totally supine people. And there are so many millions of people now in those Bill of Rights defense committees, some of whom may even lose their jobs if their names are known because they go against the administration, but they have courage. If we don't have so-called leaders with courage, we have no leadership worth anything at all.
You're very good at argument, and you're a very argumentative person, but you also said that Alexander Hamilton was very pragmatic, and he understood that sometimes you had to give a little to get a little. And what
I don't say I agree with Hamilton. I have a lot of respect for his intelligence. But if you start with the notion that people are going to lay down because they're afraid of what happens to them, what happens to the country then if nobody's going to speak out?
If you can't speak out, and you can't accomplish a lot of things, a lot of good things can come, but you've got to understand your opposition. And right now, with the way the mass media works, you're not the voice that we're hearing out there. What we're hearing are nickel and dime ads that cost $200,000 to put on the air, but are broadcast like they cost $1 million. We've heard it cost $200,000 to run the Swift Boat ads, but we've heard them on TV for 3 weeks nonstop. If you would have paid for that, it would have cost you $1 billion out of your pocket. Nobody's talked about the economy. Nobody's talked about unemployment. Nobody's talked about Iraq. Nobody's talked about the environment. Nobody's talked about anything. All they've talked about is Swift Boat ads. If
Kerry
at any time would have stood out and said he didn't go along with the Patriot Act, we would have heard nothing but commercials against Patriot.
No, that's not true. That is simply not true, but you're right about what's happening on these television ads, and it works both ways. You have the 527s. That's that loophole in the so-called Campaign Finance Act that allows MoveOn.org and all these other 527s that have spent many, many millions of dollars doing the same thing to the right, to Bush. And you have MoveOn.org with a television ad in which Bush morphs into a picture of Adolf Hitler. They're both. I mean, they need... You can't get them off the air because the Federal Election Commission is run by a total libertarian in the wrong way, and he says everybody should do what they want. What those ads do, whether they're the Swift Boat ads or the MoveOn.org ads, they violate the law because the only reason they have the ability to use all of this money, this soft money, is they're not supposed to be in coordination with the political campaigns. But the head of the Democratic political campaign for Kerry is also head of one of these 527s.
Okay, I want to thank the listener for his call this afternoon. Let's talk with another listener. Line 3, someone on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Celeste, you've chosen the guest who has some good points to be made and has the inability to express them in a way or to discuss them in a way that's appropriate for your program. I think that he is insulting, and his style is not something that you should ever go back to again, and I don't think he's worthy of having a discussion with. Thank you.
Well, that's his opinion, right?
Okay, let's talk with somebody else who I'm sure has an opinion. Line 1, caller in Champaign. Hi.
Yes, Kofi Annan is showing his lack of decisiveness and his lack of backbone by not quelling the riots and killings in Sudan as well as the Tutsi massacre. But that's not the reason I called. I'd like to know the main reason why you do not believe in God.
Oh, I once read in Kierkegaard, the Danish philosopher, and this was when I was still a young teenager, and I couldn't make what he called, and that's what made it real to me. He said to believe in a God, and there are many different gods or different faiths to get to God, you have to leap into faith. It can't be reason alone. I've never been able to do that. I envy, and I do envy people who have the faith. I was privileged to know and become a friend of John Cardinal O'Connor, the late Cardinal of New York, and I wrote a book about him. And we had discussions about this. He understood where I was coming from, and I must say, I think his strength was there anyway, but I believed him when he said that his faith in God was a large part of that. I feel impoverished, I really do, that I don't have it, but I can't fake it. I just don't have it.
Well, it seems to me if you'd read the Bible same as I did to test the Word, and then if you find faults, just like in anything, if it doesn't hang together, you know it's false. But then if you read it, then you would see that the Word did become flesh and dwelt among us because he was named Emmanuel. That means Emmanuel. And there are just all sorts of clues in there that will tell you things. And then it will tell you things like we know that fasting is good for the body. It cleans out the body, improves the efficiency. It tells you to fast and things. And I read it when I was a doubter, and then after I read it, I do now believe that Christ is God.
Well, I have read the Bible. In fact, I've read the Old Testament in the original because I had to, and then I read the King James Version. I read it as literature, and it certainly is something I keep coming back to, but I can't make the leap. I'm sorry, but I can't.
Okay, let's talk with another caller. No, we don't have another caller at the moment. Maybe you would tell us about your experience working, knowing and working with a woman by the name of Frances Sweeney.
Frances Sweeney is the person who has most influenced me in my life, and I owe her enormous debt. When I was about 15 years old, I grew up in Boston. This was during the period when Father Coughlin, whom some of your listeners may be of an age to remember, had a very popular radio show out of the Church of the Little Flower in Royal Oak, Michigan. He was an anti-Semite and a very eloquent anti-Semite, and Boston was probably the most anti-Semitic city in the country. And there was a young woman named Frances Sweeney who had a four-page newspaper called the City Record. It was intended to root out corruption in the politics of the city. That wasn't hard in those days. You could just open the window and stuff would come in. But Frances Sweeney was a devout Catholic. She was furious at the fact that the church in Boston, the Catholic Church, was silent during all of this anti-Semitism. And so she decided to do some investigative reporting, and she recruited some of us teenagers, to go and attend some of these, you know, neo-fascist, you want to call them, meetings. And I was one of them. And just getting to know Fran, by the way, it was one point after we had done this for several months, she passed out a quiz one Saturday, and this is like the sensitivity training things these days, but it had to do with our attitudes toward various groups, etc. We filled it out, and the next Saturday she came in, she threw the papers on the desk, and she said, "Some of you are the worst anti-Catholic bigots I've ever run across. You have all these stereotypes in your head." And that was a good lesson to me long before Duke Ellington talked about avoiding categories. Fran was a woman, she was utterly fearless. She wouldn't take advertising. She said, "I don't want to be enthralled to anybody so that they can cut their advertising and cut my paper." And at one point, the cardinal then, Cardinal O'Connell, not O'Connor, called her in. He was very angry at her because she'd criticized the church for its silence on anti-Semitism. And he pretty much said, "If you don't stop this, I'll excommunicate you." And Fran was shaken. She was, as I said, a very committed Catholic. But she went on doing what she felt she had to do. And she is the model I've had in my head for the rest of my life.
Okay, let's talk with one more listener this afternoon before we wrap up. It'll have to be quick, though. Line one, cell phone, go ahead.
All right, well, there's a lot of things I could say, but I'm going to say this. Celeste, please have him on. This has been one of the best shows I've heard. So someone else slammed him. I think this has been very interesting. Very, 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 very good show. Wonderful guest.
Okay. Well,
I want to thank that listener. He gives me courage.
Well, I want to thank everyone who called, and I want to thank our guest Nat Hentoff for a spirited discussion, a spirited exchange this afternoon. It's something we don't do very often here on this program. I will say that, and I think that's what upset our previous caller. More often, we have it's a much quieter kind of conversation, but today a spirited discussion. And Nat Hentoff, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be spirited.
Okay. Well, take care now.
Okay.
Nat Hentoff has been our guest in this portion of the afternoon magazine, journalist, civil libertarian, and music critic. And I imagine he got quite a few folks this afternoon riled up in one direction or another. But our thanks to him this afternoon. His latest book, American Music, is published in March of this year. It's a collection of more than 60 pieces written over the last several years. It's available from DeCapo Press. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here is Dave Dickey.
Thank you very much, Celeste, and good afternoon, everyone. Let's go ahead and look at the settlement prices on the Chicago Board of Trade, where we see wheat and corn both down today. Corn giving back gains it made earlier in the session as speculative selling came on board to overcome a lazy start of the session. And then the wheat market also turning lower. The soybean market in the green today, but giving back much of the gains it made earlier in the day. Let's go ahead and talk about the specifics. September wheat, a high of 316, a low of 304 and a half, settling 306 down 5.5. December, a high of 329, a low of 316 and a half, settling 319 down 5.25. March, a high of 340 and a half, a low of 328 and a half, settling 330 and a half down 5.25. May, a high of 345, a low of 333 and a half, settling 334 and 3/4 down 5 3/4. July, a high of 348 and a half, a low of 337, settling 338 and a quarter down 4 3/4. September corn, a high of 235, a low of 227, settling 228 down 4 1/4. December, a high of 244 and 3/4, a low of 235 and a half, settling 237 down 5. March, a high of 252 and a quarter, a low of 243 and a half, settling 245 down 5. May, a high of 257 and a half, a low of 249 and a quarter, settling 250 and a half down 4 3/4. July, a high of 262 and a half, a low of 254, settling 254 and 3/4 down 5. September corn, a high of 263 and a half, a low of 256, settling 256 and a half down 4. September oats, a high of 145 and a quarter, a low of 141 and a quarter, settling 141 and 3/4 down 3/4. December, a high of 152 and 3/4, a low of 148 and a quarter, settling 149 and a quarter up 1/4. September soybeans, a high of 637 and a half, a low of 616 and a half, settling 623 and a quarter, up 3 1/4. November, a high of 626, a low of 602 and a half, settling 612 and a half, up 6 1/4. January, a high of 631 and a half, a low of 608 and a half, settling 618, up 5 3/4. March, a high of 635, a low of 615, settling 624, up 6. May, a high of 635, a low of 616 and a quarter, settling 626, up 6 3/4. July beans, a high of 639, a low of 620, settling 626 and a half, up 4. September soybean meal, a high of 201, a low of 192.50, settling 194 down 5.30. October, a high of 188, a low of 181, settling 183 down, and that was up 60. October soybean oil, a high of 25.71, a low of 25.03, settling 25.19, up 27. October, a high of 24.84, a low of 24.23, settling 24.43, up 24 on the day. Settlement prices are also in on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, where, Celeste, the softer tone that we've seen earlier this week continues to dominate the cattle feeder and live cattle pits.
That's right. Let's take a look at the numbers. August feeder cattle, 118.45, the high price today. The low, 118.30. The settlement, 118.37 and a half. That down 2.5 cents. September feeders, 113.80, the high, 112.75, the low, 113.17 and a half, the settlement, that down 12 and a half. October, 111 even, the high, 109.90, the low, 110.22 and a half, the settlement, that down 42 and a half. August live cattle, 83.97 and a half, the high, 83.05, the low, 83.12 and a half, the settlement, that down 47 and a half. October, 84.37 and a half, the high, the low, 83.30, the settlement, 83.55. That down 40. Lean hogs. October lean hogs. Today's high 64.30. The low 62.50. The settlement 63.32.5. That finishing up a nickel. December lean hogs 61.87.5. The high 60.40. The low 61.22.5. The settlement that unchanged. February 61.75. The high 60.55. The low 60.95. The settlement that down 52.5. April 61.10. The high 60.20. The low 60.40. The settlement that down 55. And August bellies 91.45. The high 88. Even the low 90.70. The settlement that finishing up 80 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 92 points at 10,191. The NASDAQ up 24 at 1861. The S&P 500 up 9 points at 1106.
Agricultural information is made possible in part by a grant from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, the nature of what's to come.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Ed Schoenfeld from Douglas, Alaska writes, Dear Dr. Science, if global warming melts all the glaciers and ice fields and floods coastal communities up to their eyeballs, will New York, New York still be the city so nice you have to say it twice?
When that happens, New York will even be a nicer place than it is now. Global warming will send a wave of warm water to wash away all the grime, filth, and mean-spiritedness that has plagued the Big Apple since the days of Boss Tweed. Imagine having a total stranger slosh through a pool of brackish brine just to give you a hug. When that happens, you'll be saying New York three, maybe four times before you hold your breath and dive down to catch the A train.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI, Public Radio International. For information about the new Dr. Science Get Smart Kit, including his new compact disc with screensaver for PCs and an honorary master's degree mouse pad, all for $21.95. Call 800-989-DUCK.
It's 2 minutes before 2 o'clock. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. A tornado watch is in effect for portions of west central Illinois until 7 o'clock this evening. A flood watch is in effect for parts of west central Illinois until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Ed Kieser's forecast for the two states, Illinois and Indiana, this afternoon. Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms will become severe. Highs ranging from 75 in northwestern Illinois to 89 in the far south. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows ranging between 67 and 72. Tomorrow in Illinois, a mix of clouds and sunshine, very warm and humid, with a few scattered showers and thunderstorms, most numerous during the morning. In Indiana tomorrow, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms. Highs ranging from 83 in southeastern Indiana to 93 in western Illinois. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, considerable cloudiness and humid with occasional showers and thunderstorms.